Welcome to Sunday Morning at Faith Assembly, featuring the ministry of Senior Pastor Phil Goss. We're glad you've joined us.
We have with us today a very special guest, and he is a part of our Mission Sunday. You also notice in that bulletin that you received, there's a commitment card that we're going to look at a little later in the service. So please know where that's at, because we're going to ask you towards the end of the service to help us establish a budget with our missions for the year ahead. And so please take note of that card. But Dave Reaver travels around the world speaking to all kinds of different groups. He is here with us today to tell us his story. Would you welcome Dave Reaver as he comes to minister this morning?
Thank you. Good morning. That was terrible. Good morning. I am thrilled to be with you today. It's great to be in, I started to say sunshiny Florida, but it's rainy Florida today. But you look marvelous, darling. Are you happy? I have a little problem this morning with my hearing. I'm not hearing except in my left ear today. So I started to say maybe the lady doing the sign language, if she could help me, I guess if I hear with one ear, she could sign with one hand. I have no idea what that just meant. But I hope you can hear me better than I can hear me. I'm really struggling, and you know, it's very distracting. So please bear with me if I seem a little distracted. I will work through this, okay? But I am, again, thrilled to be here. Thank you, Pastor Koss, for letting me come and bring our musician team. I have had the joy of traveling with this young couple for 21 years. That's pretty unusual nowadays. It's kind of like a marriage. My wife and I have been married 43 years. Now, that's not bad. In a generation where if you get through the first 4 months of marriage, you're doing pretty good, not to mention 43 years. My wife was going to be here with me. We were planning to be here together. And we got a notification we're being audited by the IRS. Oh, thank you. And you know what? They do it every year. And you know why? They can't believe that people actually give to the church. They audit us over our tithes every year. That is disgusting. I wonder if an IRS agent ever gave anything to a church in his or her life. They just can't get it that we actually believe that God is valuable in our lives and supporting his work is valuable in our lives. I was watching you give. God bless you as you support your church and your missions projects, and let the world try to figure it out. Just keep on giving. Amen. Amen. And so she didn't get to come, but I miss her. I wish she was here to meet you. I'm 64, and I'm not over the hill. I am the hill. I've been excavating the hill. You know what that means? Diet. Moving right along. I'm sure that interested you. I have two children, four grandchildren, and I am living a dream, not a nightmare. I'm living a dream, wishing as a young boy I could serve the Lord. Now I look back over all these years, and I've had the dream come true. There's nothing more wonderful than to serve the Lord and to see the life that you've wanted come to pass. Is that okay to tell you that? Does it sound like it's a cushy life? Look at me. Does this look like a cushy life? I'm going to tell you something. Getting old, a lot of us understand, getting old is not for sissies, amen? And getting hurt in Vietnam is not for sissies. I, as you can see, I'm scarred and disfigured and mangled, and people come up to me and, what happened to your face? And that doesn't bother me, except the guy asking the question is uglier than I am, never was burned. What happened to your face? And I'm thinking, dude, what happened to your mother? I'm sorry. You know you're ugly when you're born. The doctor slapped your mom. I think you're laughing, but I can't hear. So if you're not laughing, it's okay. I'm going to enjoy my own laugh. I entertain myself pretty well. But anyway, my life has been a life that, to this point, I have to tell you, it's been a great and exciting life. It's had its ups and downs, but doesn't everyone? Everyone suffers disappointment in life. And those things that happen in our lives sometimes are serious enough that it actually wounds us. You know, I don't know if you call a bruise a wound. I'm sure you can. But somewhere there is, it crosses the line of being just an experience and it becomes an injury. It becomes something that left you wounded. You know what's dangerous about a wound? Which typically in my mind, maybe not yours, but in my mind, a wound is something that violates the flesh. It somehow penetrates to the point that it becomes dangerous. If you've been wounded, you need to be healed. And if you've been healed of a wound, you have a scar. Well, I can tell you this. I am a master on the subject of scars. I have my doctorate in that. I know about scars. My body is scarred, mutilated, amputated, beat up, lacerated. It is. And if I showed you all my scars, I'd have to either charge you or kill you. Now, that's funny right there. I don't care who you are. And having a scar means you got hurt. Everybody agrees, say amen. And number two, having a scar means you got over it. Amen? But what about this for the third point about a scar? A scar is evidence. Say evidence. A scar is evidence of empathy. What does that mean? Think about it before I expand upon it for a second. Evidence of empathy. What is empathy? It's not sympathy. Sympathy is to feel sorry for somebody. Empathy is to feel sorry with somebody. You're a smart audience. In other words, if you say to someone, I know how you feel, you better have a scar to prove it. If I say to someone who's been through divorce, I know how you feel, I better have divorce papers to prove it. But I don't, and I don't want them. I'd rather go through 10 Vietnams than one divorce, and that's not to put down the divorcee. In fact, if you've been through divorce and you're here this morning, you're my hero, not because you went through divorce, but because you never gave up on God, and you took him at his word when he said he would never leave you. Jesus doesn't divorce us. He goes through it with us. He encounters what we encounter, and he has scars to prove it. Come on, say amen. Say it loud enough for me to hear you. Oh, thank you. Now, okay. Yeah. Think about that. Jesus didn't go to Calvary in a limousine, and he didn't die by lethal injection. They crucified the Son of God, hands up, palms out, where the whole world could see his scars, and he can say to us convincingly, I know how you feel. In other words, he has evidence of empathy. He was wounded. He was bruised. He was hurt like us. Why is that important? Because when it does hurt in our lives, and we know he knows how we feel, we trust his words of advice and counsel because he's already been through it. How much more can your life be verified through your scars, quote, experiences, when you say to someone, I know how you feel, and they say, well, how'd you get through it? Your words are verified and your counsel is acceptable when you tell them, I got through it by the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And here to put that into words is a lady that I know you will trust her words in this song, verifiable through her own experience in living a life for Christ, one of the most beautiful and wonderful ladies you'll ever meet. Her husband's here, David, running her sound, and she will put that sound right in your heart. Would you welcome Kathy Wampler?
All alone and suffered on my own. I didn't think anyone would understand until you opened up and shared your painful past with me. Then the wounds that I kept hid were touched by heaven's hand, because God used you and all that you've been through. Don't hide the scars, don't be afraid to let them show, 'cause someone who hurts will see themselves in you, and there is healing in knowing you're not. Nights of the soul and bear the pain and all the wounds that life can bring. But it's in our weakest times we need each other's strength, and with God's love flowing through us, we find the faith we need. So no matter
Now, isn't that a song that says it beautifully? Hiding scars. I've wondered a few times in my life if I could hide my scars and still have a job. I could go to work with Phantom of the Opera. Checked it out, but their mask covers only the left side. So that would leave me still exposed. So I gave up and I said, God, use the scars for your purpose. And that song says it best. Kathy's music's available in the foyer. Is there... I hadn't been that far, but there it is, that direction. And that song and many others that touch the heart are available. My own story is available on a CD. If you enjoy listening to stuff going down the road, there you go. You'll miss a few exits, hopefully laughing more than crying. By the way, we sent that to the Pentagon to put in archives. It's a story out of a war zone, of an unpopular war. Wow, I wonder if they have popular wars. Sounds like popular leprosy, doesn't it? I don't think I want it. But it's a story that touched the Pentagon, and you know what? When we sent it to them, they ordered 100,000 more copies and asked me to take them to the troops in Iraq, and I said, let me pray about it. Amen. Okay. Also available is the story on a DVD. It's a great movie. It was produced by Worldwide Pictures and paid for by Dr. Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. It's a great movie, rated R for righteous. No cursing and no nudity. I don't appear naked anywhere in that movie. That's why there's no cursing. That's all right. a book called Scarred, autobiography, endorsements from Ronald Reagan and Billy Graham, and I think you'll find it endorsable too. You'll enjoy a great book with a story out of the war that doesn't leave you depressed. And a very important book for your grandchildren or teenagers if you have them, whatever. One that'll give you a whole new vision for teenagers. These are their stories. Nobody's ever cried for me. The title story is of a little girl raped by her stepfather. And as she told me her story, I began to weep. She reached across the desk and touched my face and wiped the tear off. And she said, "Nobody's ever cried for me." And at that point, I lost it. I boo-hooed, threw my arms around her, snotted all over her sleeve. And she patted me on the back saying, "It's okay, mister, you'll be fine. There's a counselor here. We have a shirt that everybody loves. I think you'll love it. Live your life so the preacher won't have to lie at your funeral." And finally, one of the most important things we have ever brought, quote, to the table. This is a very unique thing. You would call it a bracelet. It's called a survival bracelet by the troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. They wear these. It's made out of 550 cord, which is a small rope that'll hold up to 550 pounds. It is used as lion-on parachutes. They braid them together and make a bracelet, and it is called a survival bracelet. It is a symbol, a sign of surviving in a war that is ripping our nation and our young people apart. I work with them constantly throughout the year. I've done 6 tours into Iraq and 1 into Afghanistan in the last 8 years. I work with these young men and women, and they are struggling to hold it together. These bracelets are made so often by themselves in the war zone. They're made so often just to symbolize the struggle to survive. We have them available today. In it is a card that you can write a thank you. Listen carefully to what I'm saying. You can write a thank you this morning on that card. Put your email address or whatever address you would like them to respond to, and they have a means to actually contact you, and you can follow up on your love note, your encouragement note, your thank you note, and you may very well lead these people from a war zone to the throne of God. This is happening over and over and over. I personally take those cards. I took a stack of them on my last trip, which I just got back from about a month and a half ago. And when these guys get them, they sit down and read these things. They'll sometimes sit in a circle and they'll pass them around and show each other what one they had. It is a powerful form of encouragement. Can I encourage you to get one of these, sign and fill that thing out and send it through our personal means to the hearts of our warriors? You know why there's no Taliban hand grenade rolling down this aisle? You know why there's no Al-Qaeda truck bomb in your parking lot? You know why the enemy that hates you, your God, your Jesus, and the Jewish nation that we as a nation stand by, you know why they hate you? And do you know why there is no Taliban hand grenade here? They hate you because we stood up against them. And those who stand up against them are called the United States military. And they deserve our love and support. Show that to them right now. Amen. God bless you. If you don't mind my electronic assistance with bigger letters, I'm not only going deaf, I'm going blind, I think, too. If you have your iPad, would you join with me and turn to Philippians chapter 1, verse 12. Just one verse. Very simply, you should understand, brethren, that the things which happened unto me have fallen out rather to the furtherance of the gospel. One verse that says everything I'm trying to say to you. Things happen in our lives. The world knows this, and they have bumper stickers that say something to that effect very crudely. Things happen. It happens to everybody. You're gonna get hurt in life, and most of us in this room have lived long enough to prove that. Amen? You're gonna get hurt in life. That's not the question. The question in life is, when you get hurt, how are you going to deal with it? Is it gonna be one of these, "Why me, God?" Don't do that. What if he answered you? Well, I don't know, George. There's just something about you I don't like. Pfft. Fire out of heaven. Sorry, George, I was trying to hit your wife, and you moved. You know, he has to allow for windage, rotation, orbit, light years, all that. God does not do evil. Say it with me. God does not do evil. How many of you believe Romans 8:28 is true, that all things, say all. That's not part of, some of, most of, lots of. It's all of the things that happen to us in our lives work together for good on the condition that we love God and we're called according to his purposes. Otherwise, all those things that happen to us are for no good cause. But with Christ, he uses the things the devil intended for evil, God intends for good. Aren't you glad you know Jesus? So that your wound turned in healing to a scar gives you an answer to those who are hurt, and you have the ability to change their tragedy into a triumph. Give the Lord a hand this morning. He's the equalizer of all this. And in the process of our struggle in life, we are made stronger. And when you look at my face and you look at my countenance and you see these scars, you have to understand, I didn't go down this path for nothing. Something good is coming out of it. They don't call me to go into the Middle East and work with our troops because I'm good looking. I am, but that's not why. They don't send me to exemplify my mighty military strength and body form. I'll be all right just a minute. They don't call me for my intellect. I was in the top 10% of the lower one-third of my class. So reckon why they call me. I'll tell you why. I've been hurt too. Just like everybody else, we get hurt. And I have a scar to prove it. But I am more than a conqueror through Jesus Christ. This isn't a story about me. It's a story about him. Our lives are not about us. They're about him. And we are conquerors, more than a conqueror through Christ. I could be sitting in a bar somewhere in Florida today, popping tops and sucking suds and shooting drugs, beat my wife, molest my kids, blame God, blame America, blame the president, blame the war, blame the Vietnamese, blah, 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 blah. The world's sick of hearing somebody else is always responsible for my failure. I'm not responsible for myself. Oh, yes, I am. And I chose to follow Christ, and that made the difference. It's my choice. It's your choice how you deal with the consequences in life. I chose that my consequences should be for a productive purpose, and that only can come through Jesus Christ. You agree? Say amen. So on July the 26th, and boy, do I hate to say the year, 1969. Sounds like right after the War of 1812, doesn't it? July 26, 1969, on the bank of a river called the Vam Co Tay, deep in the heart of Vietnam along the border with Cambodia, on the river called the Vam Co Tay, that day, my life changed. I picked up a white phosphorus hand grenade and drew back to throw and did not know in my hand rested my destiny. Not my destination. My destination was finalized when I gave my heart to Christ. Destiny, that's not where you're going. Destiny is how you go about getting there. Now, that changed. My destination is heaven. My destiny? Well, I thought I was going to be a pastor. I would have followed in the footsteps of your pastor. I would gladly have been privileged to, in fact, be a pastor of a great church like this. That's what I shot for. My dad was a pastor. He was my hero. That was my motivation. But first and foremost, it wasn't pastoring. It was a relationship with God that would please him. Because the highest calling of the human race is not to be a pastor, or to be an evangelist, or to be a church member, or to be, name your purpose in life. The greatest purpose in life, the highest calling is this, that we would please the Lord. And for thy pleasure, they are and were created. We were created not to be preachers, not to be layperson. We were created to please God. And if you're not pleasing God, you could be president of an evangelical society for all I care and not please God in your life and in your personal relationship. So it doesn't matter what your position in life is. It is your purpose in life to please God. Do you agree with that? Say amen. So I was going after the ministry. And on July the 26th, 1969, my life changed. It would not change my destination, but it would change the path I would take in life, which I'd already started on from high school. As a matter of fact, when at the age of 16, I gave my heart to Christ. At the same year, I gave my heart to Brenda. Yep. I asked her to marry me, and she slapped me. She said, well, I'm only 13. I said, I know, but you have the body of a 14-year-old. She slapped me again. Little TMI, too much information. She said, if you love me, you'll wait for me. That was my door open to continue to hope. If you love me. Well, now I could prove it by waiting for her, and we waited. I know it sounds TMI again, too much information. But we were both virgin when we got married. You can give me a hand clap there. I'll personally accept it. Thank you. Yep, both virgin, and 43 years later, we're still married. You thought I was going to say virgin, didn't you? Yes, you did. I could see your eyes. They flipped right over. So I have kids and grandkids. And my little granddaughter, 5.5 years old, crawled up in my lap, squeezed this old shot-up, burn-mutilated face between her tiny little fingers, looked me in the eye and said, Papa. And thank God for the South, because this is where Southern speak is spoke proper. Proper speech of Papa means mighty man of war, holy man of God. Everybody agrees, say amen. Papa, she said, I said, what, little angel? And she sang to me. Listen to her words. You are so beautiful to me. And she bounces to get my bridle. Can't you see? I couldn't see. I was crying and blowing snot bubbles. But I think you can see, regardless of where I've come from, it's where I am right now. Not just in my experience in life, but my walk with Christ. My destiny has led me down a path that has left me with joy unspeakable and full of glory. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't about Dave. This is about Jesus. He's the one that's made the difference. This last few weeks, I've been traveling in public schools. I've spoken in schools in Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and wherever I go, speaking in schools. The kids give standing ovations, and teachers say, you're the only one that ever got a standing O out of this crowd. How do you do it? It's not about me. It's the Jesus in me that gives hope to these kids. And when I'm so restricted that I can't even talk about Jesus, this little light of mine, I'm just going to let it shine. And wherever on the black backdrop of hopelessness that this little light shines, somebody figures it out. And through word association and a variety of means, I don't always get to come right out and say Jesus makes the difference. But when I'm through, they don't come up saying, are you Buddhist? They do come up saying, are you Baptist? Don't you get it? It's Jesus that makes the difference. And on July the 26th, 1969, my life changed. And that little daughter who gave me a little daughter, who gave me the most wonderful compliment in the world by singing to me how beautiful I am, well, it's just proof that Jesus makes the difference. Because if I was sitting in that bar popping tops and sucking suds and shooting drugs, beating my wife and molesting my kids, that little girl wouldn't think I was beautiful. See, there's two places in life to have scars. Some of you in this room right now may have the most perfect body in the world. I don't know. And I really could care less. It's what's on the inside that matters. And if you're scarred on the inside, I would not trade bodies with you for anything in the world. I wouldn't trade lives with you. Give me my old scars and my little granddaughter who thinks I'm beautiful. She can't imagine a scar on me. She doesn't even see them. And that is the way Jesus looks at me. He doesn't see my scars. He sees what's on the inside. And I'm glad to tell you that every wound on the inside has been so healed, it doesn't even have a scar on it. I'm the happiest fat man you ever met. So I kissed my little teenage wife goodbye and went to war. We married young, went to Bible college. I got drafted, but I joined the Navy before they could seal the deal on the draft because I didn't want to go in the Army. I was afraid they'd hurt me. I joined the Navy where I could be safe. You ever get up one morning and have a bad year? They sent me to training in a place called NAB, Naval Amphibious Base, and I was trained by Navy SEALs. My SEER training, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape training was by the meanest bunch of SEALs I ever met in my life. They eat rocks. They eat their young. They make Rambo look like a brownie. They made me run. You ever see a fat man run? I was still jiggling 15 minutes after we were through running. I lost so much weight, I had to tease the hair on my legs to keep my socks up. You got it. I say that in schools, and they just look at me. They have no clue what that meant. What do you mean you tease the hair on your legs? I said, I call my hairy legs funny names. I teased them. That really confused them. They finished all the training. I went to Vietnam, kissed her goodbye at the airport. And I remember she said to me as I turned to walk away, she said, Davey, are you coming back? What am I going to tell her? You know, we're in the 10th year of the war on terror, and there's been not yet 5,000 killed. We have not yet lost 5,000. In one day, we lost 6,000 in World War II. In Vietnam, in 10 years, we lost almost 60,000. It was in the 7th year of the war in Vietnam, and there were 50,000 dead, and she said to me, are you coming back? What am I going to tell her? Oh, don't worry, baby. I'll be back. No. But I did tell her I'll be back, and I was that close to another destiny. What if I'd said, I'll be back? I could be governor of California. Some of you have no idea what that just meant. We'll move ahead. I said, I'll be back without a scar. I was that close. Boy, I blew it. What if I just said, I'll be back? But I made a promise I couldn't keep. When I said I'll be back without a scar, she and I both agree it's the only promise I ever made to her and didn't keep. And it's the only promise she's ever seen me break that she had to forgive me for. She got a bum rap, sold a bill of goods. A handsome young prince she married turned into a frog that day. That's not the way the fairy tale should end. But the fairy tale isn't over. I came home. It was a mess. On that day in July, a sniper put me in his crosshairs, squeezed off around, shooting at my head. Missed. Hit my hand and exploded the grenade 6 inches from my right ear. 5,000 degrees of white hot phosphorus covered almost half my body. Blew my hair off, face off, ear off. The entire 3/4 of my face was blown off. I looked down. My face was on my boots. I could see my heart beating. My back was on fire, skin dripping off my arms. No one had to tell me it didn't look good. In fact, my brain told me I was dead, and I didn't know if I was dead or not dead. I've never been dead. I had no comparison there because I don't know what happens. When you're dead, do you have any consciousness? What happens? I don't know. All I know is if it hadn't been for Jesus, if it hadn't been for divine intervention, I wouldn't be telling you this story. I'm supposed to be dead, and I know it. You know that. You don't have a grenade explode inches from your ear. I have my hair back. Well, I don't really. It is my hair, but I bought it. And I've chased it across many a church parking lot on windy Sundays. I even had a dog bring it back once, stinking little mutt. My ear came off too. I got a lot of parts. I put them all on the bed the other day. My wife said goodnight, and I was in the other room. That is not true. That is a joke. But losing your ear is interesting. I got a brand new one now. I just got it for Christmas. Isn't that a weird thing? I bet you've never heard anyone say that in your life. I get new ears every so often. This one fell off one night when I was preaching in Jamaica. I stuck it back on. They thought it was a miracle, and they all got saved. What am I going to tell them? No, it's a phony ear. They would have thought I was a phony preacher, and they would have stoned me. I don't think Pastor Cost wanted me to come tell you that I went to Jamaica and got stoned. Something about that just doesn't ring true. So that day, my life, in fact, changed so drastically, even I didn't know if I had a life. Blood was pumping out of an open artery, and the white-hot phosphorus that was about to kill me cauterized that vein, pardon me, that artery, sealed it off, and the thing that almost killed me is what kept me alive. Wow. Almost sounds like salvation. It destroys the flesh, but it gives life to the spirit. The contradiction of grace. My, my. Helicopter landed to pick me up. I literally jumped in the river and continued to burn. Phosphorus is a chemical. Water won't extinguish it. On the bank of the river, I'm still burning. I fell over backwards. They thought I was dead. I wasn't dead. I was tired. Swimming, burning, makes you tired. Helicopter landed. They rolled me on a stretcher. It caught fire. As they were running, it ripped open. I fell through on my head. You ever have one of those days? Nothing goes right. They rolled me up in a wet blanket. Got me on another stretcher in the helicopter, and away we go. The medic thinks I'm dead, and he's filling out my death report, and I'm thinking, I got to get his attention. And I said, medic, and when I did, he almost jumped out of the helicopter. The pilot lost control. We're dropping like a rock, and I thought, oh, no, we're going to crash, and I'll be the only survivor. They got me to Saigon and then to Japan, where I stupidly asked for a mirror, and they stupidly brought it, and I saw what was left. And I'm ashamed to tell you this, but I tried to take my life because I thought Brenda would never love me. I had no gun or knife. I just pulled the tube out and laid my head back, and I waited to die. And I got hungry. Wrong tube. I did. I pulled out lunch. You can die that way. It's going to take a while, you know. You smell one pizza, and you're going to plug that tube right back in. They put me on a plane and sent me to America. Brook Army Medical Center, San Antonio, Texas. I was there for 1 year and 2 months, 13 of us in that room, and all of them died but me. I've never found a survivor. I think they all died. I remember that day. They let visitors come in. The guy in the bed next to mine was 100% third degree, no skin. No one ever survived that, and his wife came in, threw her ring on the bed. She said, you're embarrassing, and she walked out. He died. Next woman in was a ripe old age of 19, my little teenage wife. Denied I was me at first. The doctor tried to convince her, and finally she read the tag on my arm and was convinced. Instead of taking her ring off, she bent down and kissed what was left of my face, looked me in my good eye, and she said, I want you to know, I really love you. Welcome home, Davy. And when she says, Davy, I said, baby, I'm sorry I can't look good for you anymore. She said, you never were good looking to start with. That's when I found out, gentlemen, there's a lot of ways women are different. One of them is they don't judge the book by the cover. They look at the heart. They look at the integrity, the character, the willingness to protect and provide. Will it be a good husband, a good dad, a good grandpa? She loved me when I was unlovable. I left the hospital with a suitcase in one hand and a sweetheart in the other, and I did really well right up till 9/11. And on that day, when I saw those airplanes flying into those buildings, and I realized we're under attack by an enemy so brutal that he would kill 3,000 innocent Americans in a matter of only minutes, I went almost insane. I remember yelling, and I yelled at God. I said, God, please don't leave me out of this war. Let me do something for my country. I spun around, looked at Brenda, and I said, I need an M16. She said, you need to sit down before you have a stroke. So I sat down. She's always right. I didn't want to have a stroke and her standing over my body saying, I told you so. 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from Department of Defense. They sent me into Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Afghanistan, and ultimately into Iraq now many, many times, and getting ready to leave again. I just got here, and now getting ready to turn around and go back in just June, and then again in November into Afghanistan. Why?
Because a man with a scar has a story to tell and he's hard to deny. Wow. Sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? Jesus took the hard path. Well, I would never have chosen what happened to me. I don't think, having the knowledge of the future that Christ had and still took on what was coming, I don't think I could have done it. So he left me ignorant of what was coming, and thank God, because as it happened, it unfolded on a daily basis. But Jesus knew his destiny from the very beginning. And when was the very beginning? For him, he was always there. He was slain from the foundation of the earth, from the foundation of the world. He knew what he was going to go through. I didn't know what I was going to go through. But as it unfolded, I look back now and I say, so far so good. I don't know what tomorrow holds. Maybe I've only made a down payment on the suffering yet to come. I don't know. But what I do know is this. All things. Not some of, part of, most of, lots of. All things work together for good. It works together for that little teenage boy who a few days ago rolled up his sleeve and showed me the scars on his wrist where he had tried to take his life. And he knew that I knew how he felt. And he was willing to expose the inner pain of his life to me because somehow my scars brought him hope. Sound familiar? Whose scars have brought you hope? See, it's not about me. It is about Jesus. Don't hide the scars. Don't let a world around you struggling and hoping for someone to give evidence of empathy that really does understand. Don't hide that scar. Don't hide that scar from them. You may be denying them the only Jesus they'll ever see. Be willing to be vulnerable. Open your heart to the hurting. Let them know you know. Use your past that the devil tried to destroy you with as a purpose, give someone else to live for. Do you agree with me? Put your hands together. I need a little support here. Thank you. So on 9/11, my life changed just like yours. I made some promises to God, and he gave some promises to me. And as time went along, I realize this is going to turn into a Vietnam if we don't step up, all of us, and say, never again. You'll never stand on the promise, the premises of universities and state capitals and demonstrate against the very people who almost died or did die and gave you the freedom to do that. Don't ever turn against the warriors like you did in Vietnam. Everybody agree with that? Never again. Never, ever, ever again will we do that to our troops. So we built a place called Eagle Summit Ranch. It's high up in the mountains of Colorado at 9,000 feet. Additional oxygen is provided at no additional cost. We bring the warriors from the war zones who've come back beat up, lost legs, lost arms, lost their memories. And we train them. We train them to do what I'm doing right now. We call them pulpit-pounding prosthetic preachers. It's been so successful, the Army has lined them up. We now estimate, according to their estimations, that the ranch in Colorado is now booked for the next 5 years, training young warriors to have hope for the future, giving them a hope and giving them their due respect and honor. It's been the most exciting thing I've ever done in my 40-plus years of ministry. It's been so successful, the ranch we built now cannot accommodate the demand, so we started another one down in Texas. These projects are very expensive, but I don't care what it costs as long as we're changing the lives of these young men and women and giving them a future. I've got them in pulpits as I speak. Right now, they're preaching the gospel around the country. They're on television shows, military installations, universities, and high school presentations, constantly going after it. Changing. One guy's already written 4 books, produced his own DVD and CD, and is self-sufficient, when I say that, not separating him from the supply of the Spirit of Christ in his life, But he's self-sufficient, does not have to have the government take care of him. Think about that, my friend.
Thank you for joining us for today's service. If you would like to talk with someone about what you've heard, please visit our website at faith.ag or call us at 239-543-2700. If you're in the Fort Myers area and don't already have a church home, you're invited to join us for Sunday morning at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m. Faith Assembly is located at 7101 Bayshore Road. Join us again next week for Sunday Morning. Faith Assembly Sunday Morning is a production of Faith Assembly Media Tech, North Fort Myers, Florida.